The U.S. government's economic D-Day, tightening sanctions on Iran, makes Tehran's influence through a network of militias and money launderers in neighboring Iraq all the more important as one of its few remaining lifelines. Correspondent Taylor Luck explains how the United States and Iran are applying pressure in Baghdad in an attempt to gain an advantage in their stalemate. Among our other stories today, how America's culture wars have drawn unprecedented attention to a surging Women's National Basketball Association. Also, near Ukraine's Eastern Front, members of the North Azovian Greek community are trying to preserve a language derived from medieval Greek and a distinctive culture amid war. And in Washington, the House is expected to take up a Russia sanctions bill next month that leaves President Donald Trump wiggle room as the U.S. tries to strangle the funds that Russia uses to keep its war in Ukraine going. Find more stories on our homepage, including staff writer Linda Feldman's overnight report on the South Carolina Republican Senate primary runoff between Representative Ralph Norman and Darlene Graham, the sister of the late Senator Lindsey Graham. It's Wednesday, August 26th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning, I'm Chris Sherman. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. The United States removed Syria from its terrorism sponsor list. The designation had restricted exports to Syria, requiring prior U.S. government approvals, and kept many international banks and companies from doing business in the country. It prevented Syrians from using American technology, from Google services to Amazon, without disguising their location. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, in a statement, credited Syrian President Ahmed al-Shara for distancing the country from international terrorism. Although the U.S. Commerce Department still must revise its classification of Syria, the announcement is expected to lead hesitant international banks, lenders, and insurers to consider Syria a place to do business. A gang-led massacre in Haiti left at least 47 people dead, the United Nations confirmed. Ahead of Haiti's first presidential election in more than a decade, and following the termination of temporary protected status for Haitians in the United States, the Sunday attack on Kenskoff, just outside the capital, Port-au-Prince, is believed to be one of the largest kidnappings in recent years of climbing violence. More than 50 people were abducted, and a local gang leader said hostages would be slain if Haitian authorities killed gang members. "The police are not enough," Kenskoff's mayor told the Monitor earlier this year, referring to the growing gang violence. Also, Dolly Parton, country music star, actor, and philanthropist, has died. Brian Seaver, Miss Parton's nephew and longtime head of security, announced her death Tuesday in a video message. "Through her talent, charisma, and humor, Miss Parton transcended divisive times, attracting fans across the political spectrum. Forever pushing the positive and leading by rhinestone-studded example. Hits like Jolene and I Will Always Love You helped make her name in the 1970s. That success led to acting roles, including the film 9 to 5. The octogenarian had found success in business, but never forgot her humble beginnings in the mountains of Tennessee. She was an outspoken literacy advocate through her philanthropy, including the Imagination Library." Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. One key goal for Iraqi Prime Minister Ali al-Zaidi has been the disarming of Iraqi militias, including those backed by and serving Iran. The Trump administration robustly endorses that goal, but its economic pressure on Iran is making it harder to attain. Taylor Luck reports from Amman, Jordan, for The Monitor. If passed, a bill imposing sanctions on Russia because of its war in Ukraine would mark a new step for congressional action related to that conflict. But the bill gives the president leeway to influence tariffs and other penalties. Caitlin Babcock reports from Washington for The Monitor. The Kremlin has maintained that its invasion of Ukraine was, in part, about preserving the rights of Russian speakers. But the war has displaced other minority language communities like Mariupol's North Azovian Greeks. Contributor Victoria Bellum reports from Kramatorsk, Ukraine, for The Monitor. 30 years after its founding, the WNBA has hit a new stride, with a growing fan base and soaring revenue. Alongside those successes has come greater public attention on player controversies, turning the league into a microcosm of social issues which divide Americans. Kendra Nordine Beato reports for The Monitor. Mary Oliver's poems resonate because she used vivid imagery and plain language to convey the beauty, rhythm, and order of the natural world. Filmmaker Sasha Waters' new documentary, Mary Oliver, Saved by the Beauty of the World, tells the story of a solitary kid who became a beloved, best-selling poet. Contributor Elizabeth Lund writes for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on a new civic tone for America's town halls. Like many people, members of Congress ease off on work during their August recess, but not entirely. That time has also traditionally been an opportunity to listen to voters back home, often through town halls. This summer, however, the number of legislators scheduling such events has declined 75% from a decade ago. In 2016, more than 170 lawmakers held August town halls. The Washington Post has reported, this summer, only 42 scheduled one. These civic encounters have been part of American life since well before the United States existed. At some gatherings, recorded as early as 1633, residents voted on decisions affecting their communities. At others, they shared views and debated issues. Visiting the U.S. nearly 200 years ago, French philosopher and writer Alexis de Tocqueville likened these events to primary schools for learning about democratic governance and freedoms. Such gatherings, he observed, bring liberty within the people's reach. They teach men how to use and how to enjoy it. Most people never get a chance to set foot in the Capitol. A town hall erases that distance. Lee Hamilton, a 17-term congressman from Indiana, wrote last October. Such events, the late Mr. Hamilton observed, help ordinary citizens discover shared concerns and turn politics from an abstract process into an actual relationship. But that relationship has become increasingly hostile, as evidenced by town hall shouting matches, ejection of audience members, and physical attacks on elected officials. Lawmakers' staff members are wary of situations in which a 60-minute session can be reduced to a 16-second video on social media that focuses on heated words or verbal stumbles devoid of context. Both Democrats and Republicans manage the frequency or pacing of town halls in similar ways. Data shows that the party that does not hold the presidency tends to hold more town halls, as Democrats are doing now, and as Republicans did during the Biden administration. This, researchers say, is to counteract the messaging advantages of the presidency, which typically garners extensive media exposure. At the same time, legislators are exploring how to make town halls more productive. The Select Committee on the Modernization of Congress has collaborated with civil society organizations to test out deliberative town halls, events focused on a single topic where participants receive nonpartisan background information and engage in facilitated discussions with each other and elected representatives. Such reconfigured town halls, according to the National Civic League, create places where agreement and collaboration become visible options. And, it notes on its website, people discover common ground they already shared with one another. This approach seems to be working. According to the Institute for Democratic Engagement and Accountability at Ohio State University, deliberative town halls substantially increased participants' trust in their elected representative and in Congress as a whole. They also reduced hostility between citizens from opposite parties by more than 50 percentage points in some cases. What Tocqueville observed two centuries ago can still hold true today. Local assemblies of citizens constitute the strength of free nations. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, as we humbly open our hearts to God's love and direction, we see more of God's tender care for us. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Mackenzie Farkas and Noel Flatt.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2026.